Hey, you guys, Lauren here. It has been a minute since we've recorded a new episode, so I wanted to leave a little surprise for everyone going back re-listening, or maybe you're listening for the first time. If you are interested in our graphic design contract template, you can use the code LOYALLISTENER for 50% off, making it $37.50. This is an awesome, thorough contract I made in collaboration with my lawyer, Kirsty Locke Miller. If you are insecure about your current contract, or maybe you don't have a contract, I would definitely recommend this one. You can find the link at our show notes and use the code LOYALLISTENER. Thanks for your support. Hello, and welcome to Design Beat, where we share the stories of creative women who dance to the beat of their own drum. We hope you come away uplifted, inspired, and encouraged to go for it. We just got off a call with Kirsty Locke Miller. If that name sounds familiar to you, it's because she is the lawyer behind our design contract template. This interview was so helpful. We basically just asked all the questions, all of our concerns, everything that would come to your mind when talking to a lawyer. We talked about copyrights, what needs to be copyrighted, trademarks, the best time to trademark, things to remember when starting a business, what hiring a lawyer for your business would look like. We just covered all the things, and I'm super excited for you guys to hear this. As we were talking with Kirsty, I just kept thinking how happy I am that we were able to partner with her on our design contract template, because all of these scary things that kept coming up, things that we need to watch out for when doing business for clients, all of that is covered in the contract template. So if you are interested, if you need a contract, go to designbeatpodcast.com/contract and you can find that there. It's great for the in-between where you don't quite need your own lawyer yet, but you don't want a DIY. So let's get into this. Here's Kirsty Locke Miller. Kirsty, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Oh, I'm just excited to be here. It's my first one, so I might be a little overeager.
No, but it's your first podcast.
Woohoo!
Awesome. Yay! Woo! Welcome.
We're honored. Honored.
Honored.
Okay, so let's start with some icebreaker questions. Are you ready for this?
Oh, I'm ready. Hit me with your best one.
Okay, this is the best one. We start with the best one. What's your favorite snack?
Salty Dots pretzels. Sweet. It can go between like chocolate and I don't know. There's like three categories. Salty Dots pretzels, chocolate, probably peanut butter M&Ms. It's a little controversial, but and then M&Ms. Oh, they're my favorite. My husband hates them, but they're my favorite.
I don't love them. I do love peanut M&Ms. Peanut butter. I don't know why. I don't know why I can't do it. Something about them.
I mean, it's but not I don't judge you either love them or you hate them. It's not really middle ground.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I do love Dots pretzels though. I discovered them over. Well, I had had them in the past, but I like wasn't prepared for the flavor. It like caught me off guard because I was expecting a normal pretzel. And then I like tried them again over Christmas and I just couldn't get enough of them. The mustard kind? Have you had the mustard kind?
I've had all of them. I've had the Southwest, the mustard, but like the original is just my favorite.
I love the original too. So good. Okay. What's your favorite show?
I rewatch The Big Bang Theory all the time. But if it was just me by myself picking, I would probably pick Schitt's Creek.
Yeah. Funny. So
I
funny.
I die. So, I like humorous shows. Like I've watched all of Grey's Anatomy. I've watched all of these other shows. But like if I'm just picking a show, I generally want something light.
Yeah. That's a very common answer too. Like at the end of the day, we all just want to chill out and laugh, I feel like.
Yeah. life is serious enough without.
Yeah, drama. Especially if you're a lawyer.
I mean, I try to do the happy kind of lawyering, so.
Okay, know. Good. That was like really rude of me. Like, your life is so sad.
Like, it depends on what type of law you do. It can be really sad, but
yeah,
I'm generally involved in like people who are starting businesses or they've been around for a while and they're like, we're growing and we need to do, you know, we need to upgrade our contracts. We need to fix our website. Like, and that's kind of the exciting part of being involved is like hyping up the business owners who are like, you've got this, we can do it. Like,
yeah. So, okay. That is fun.
Yeah.
That is a fun part to be involved. Okay, celebrity crush.
Oh. I don't know why this one is like way more difficult than the first, but Tom Welling.
I don't know who that is.
He was Clark Kent in Smallville.
Oh yeah.
I don't know if he's been in anything else.
I can't remember seeing him in anything.
And Smallville is like early 2000s, like maybe even the late night. I don't even know when it was on TV.
Yeah, I remember it. Yeah, like early 2000s is what I'm thinking.
Yeah, that sounds right.
That's a good one. Okay, last icebreaker question. Favorite hobby?
Favorite hobby. I like to watercolor. I am not good. Ooh. I am not good at it.
That's the best thing about hobbies is you don't have to be good at it.
I know. Like, I just saw a quote about that this week.
No, I have
refreshing.
Zero artistic bones in my body. Like I can do patterns. If you give me directions, I can execute them well, but like coming up with stuff on my own is rough. So I'm not super artistic. My grandma was really great. She did, I think, mostly oils, but anyway, so when I paint, I feel closer to her and it's just kind of a fun thing I do.
I love that. That's so cool. Okay, so Kirstie, tell us about yourself. Who is Kirstie Lockmiller? Where'd you go to law school? How did you get where you are today?
Well, I'm definitely on the older side. I turned 40 this year, which is a little...
That's not like old.
I mean, it's not until you like meet someone and you're like, so I graduated law school and then 2 years later you graduated high school. Okay. Oh, so like I graduated high school and you were in kindergarten. Like those sort of conversations make me feel old, but like on a day-to-day basis, I'm like, oh, 40 is fine.
I bet you.
So I graduated law school. I went to BYU Law and I graduated in 2008. So I've been out doing this for a while and I kind of, I don't know, did all sorts of things. I was a law clerk bailiff, which doesn't even exist anymore.
Really?
When I graduated law school, I went and I worked for a judge in the 4th District Court in Provo. And at the time, they couldn't afford to have one law clerk per judge. So they made us go and become a bailiff. So then we were the bailiff and the law clerk, and then they could afford to have one for every judge.
Isn't the bailiff like the...
Oh, the horrible uniform and like the badge and yeah, no, I went to post. I had to like do my 20 pushups while some guy sat there and stared at me telling me I wasn't dropping low enough. It was super.
Oh my gosh.
But so I started out as a law clerk and then I've just kind of, I don't know. I started in oil and gas and did that for a few years. And then I worked at a law firm and there you just do everything. But I would frequently get people who called me and who would be like, hey, I'm starting this business or whatever. But because I wasn't a partner at the law firm, I had to always defer to somebody else to say, okay, they want to do this. Like, what sort of retainer do we need? And they would be like, oh, well, that could be really extensive. So we need like a $4,000 retainer. And most of these small businesses just couldn't come up with $4,000 or $5,000 to just have some attorney sit and hold on until they need it.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I decided I was going to start the Legal Formative, a big thing that I wanted to do is to make sure that any small business that wanted access to legal could have it. I didn't want to hold retainers for people. I didn't want to charge, you know, outrageous fees. I just wanted people to feel like they could do this because they would have access to the legal side who could help them set everything up. So
I love that.
Yeah. It's been almost 2 years now, which is a little crazy. So
that's so cool. That's such a good idea because, like, speaking from the business owner's perspective, I feel like the legal side is something that I always kind of just have like hanging over my head, but it's like, it's hard to know like what to spend money on at what time. And that's why, that's a big reason I wanted to have you on the podcast, because when we did meet, you really helped walk me through that. Like, okay, yes, this is important. Like, these are the things that are important that you need to consider, but you don't need to like do all of it right now. Like, we can work through it. I'll help you. So what would you say for someone who is starting a business? What do you think is a good first step?
So this will be my like lawyerly qualification for everything. It depends.
Yeah.
But it really depends on how many clients you're going to be having. What sort of clients are they going to be coming to see you? Do you need like an office space? Is it all virtual, all online? Like, all of those things kind of change where you start out. And yeah. So some people will say, well, I don't know if this is going to be a thing, so I kind of need to get a feel for that first, which I respect. So then I would say file a DBA and at least have your name reserved to you and then kind of get going. And besides that, like, for the most part, a contract is so important. Like, you want to make sure that you've got all of your ducks in a row. And, you know, LegalZoom is there, and LegalZoom is super cheap, but then you kind of get what you pay for. And then the next step is to have, you know, a contract that was drafted by an attorney, but not necessarily for you, like what you offer. And then the third one is
shameless plug.
I mean, you know, it's a good one.
I think so.
Then the third step is saying, okay, I actually want to talk to the lawyer and say, here are the unique difficulties I'm facing. I do design work, but I share part of that with somebody else who does this. And these are where there are some like kind of unique things that we need to cover. And then once you can meet face to face with an attorney, then we can really tailor that contract to make sure that you're 100% covered. But it's hard for any contract template to do that because they're there for like the general situation.
Right.
So, you know, that's kind of like step one, two, and three of the first step. Like, the first step is to get a contract.
Yeah.
And then depending on, you know, how much income you have and what your risk is, then the next step is to form an entity and to make sure that like you're creating a wall between your clients and any potential issues and your personal assets, your personal self. So those are kind of steps one and two. And then you throw in like trademarks. And if you have something that you've built a huge brand around, you want to be checking to make sure that like somebody else hasn't trademarked it, even if they aren't using it right now. If the trademark is gone, you don't want to then have to rebrand when you go to trademark and find out that it's not there. Mm-hmm. So sometimes if I'm forming an entity for somebody, one of the first things I do is I just run a trademark clearance search. And I'm just saying, okay, let's just check and make sure that it's available. And then once it is, I say, okay, it's available today, but it's something you should keep checking to make sure that somebody else isn't registering it down the road, and then will require you to, you know, rebrand everything.
Because it does take a long time, right? Like a year?
I mean, close. It used to be a lot faster, and it got really bogged down. So a trademark that I just barely got assigned to an examiner, it was filed last May, and it was assigned to an examiner the end of January.
Wow.
So that's just like step one is filing, step two is getting assigned, but then you still have to go through a publication period and all sorts of other things before it becomes official. So it can take a while,
right? But
it does go back to the day you filed. So that's nice.
So what, at what point in a business is a good time to trademark?
And to piggyback on that question, Lauren, what is an example of something that a designer or a graphic designer or illustrator, painter, anything, what is something that would need to be trademarked? Like, is it more of a business? Is it a product? Like, what is an example of something that you would trademark?
So it depends. It's going to be the like phrase of the day. It depends. So you can do a business name. So like if you wanted to do Design Beats, or you might have to do like Design Beat Podcast, or you would want to do your business name, whatever your trade name is that you're doing. And then like that's kind of step one. So as a designer, it would be if you have, I'm trying to think, like Lauren Conrad Design, or this one is, this
from,
is a tangent.
The Hills, yes, Lauren Conrad.
this is like my favorite kind of like pop culture-y, like something's going on. There's a big trademark dispute right now going on with a girl named Haley Page and then a company called JLM Couture. JLM does wedding dresses. Haley Page was a wedding dress designer for them. And when she joined, she signed a contract that she never had reviewed by an attorney. And big companies are not here to take care of you when you're signing their contracts. And as part of her contract, she agreed that they could trademark her name and that they then owned the trademark. So when she wanted to quit, they now own Haley Page. Like they owned her legal name and she signed, I'm guessing she signed all of the documents that said I'm a living person and I'm allowing them to trademark my name.
That is crazy. They could really do that when she's like their employee.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa.
It is not something you want to agree to. It is not, it is not advisable. But also these big companies, it's also something similar like with Taylor Swift when she signed her first contract with Big Machine and she signed away all of her masters. She was so young. And even though I'm sure she had attorneys review it, like she was just like, no, I really want to get into this business. I need to do this. And so artists and designers don't even know that that's what they need to be fighting for. And they think, oh, it's just not that big of a deal.
Yeah.
But now Haley Page, she lost access to all of her social media because it was all using the trademark owned by JLM. She has been in litigation with them since like December of 2019, I think. She can't use her name. Her fiance was sued for using her name on his social media. Like it's this huge thing. So like that's kind of an extreme example of what happens if you sign away your right to trademark. But the reverse is that if you're creating a business, a trademark is another huge asset that you get to add to the books. So if you are designing, you know, like you're doing a bunch of website designs and you're like, I'm creating this template collection and I'm creating this business and it's growing and we're getting more traction, then you would want to trademark the name. So then if at some point you're like, I don't want to do, you know, website templates anymore, like I'm over this, you then can sell your business. And as listed in those assets, including all of the design templates you did, is also your trademark. And then that trademark becomes valuable and it makes your business more valuable because there's a recognition to the name.
Interesting.
A really long answer to your question. Does that answer the question?
Yes. I mean, that's like, wow. I would not think that somebody could actually like sign away their name.
Yeah. It doesn't.
I mean, that's definitely worst case scenario. But like, she signed it clearly. Like,
yeah. And
yikes.
And that's where like contracts come into play. Like, every contract is important and having somebody who's fighting for your rights when you're reviewing these contracts is also big. And if it's between you and a client and you're like, hey, I'm a home designer and I'm going to be creating mood boards for each of the rooms in your house, you know, a contract that sets out expectations for your clients, like what are your responsibilities as a client? Well, I need to respond to you when you say, do you like couch A or couch B better? And, you know, you need to lay out those expectations for your clients so then you can do your job, because otherwise a client could come back and be like, no, you were just supposed to come up with these mood boards. And like, I'm not supposed to help. I'm not the designer. But if you lay it out at the beginning and say, I'm the designer, I'll pull everything together, but like, this is for you, so you need to have feedback and here's your responsibilities, it makes it so much easier to work throughout the project.
Right. That's one thing I love about having a contract is just setting those expectations. Like, this is how I work. This is what we're going to do. This is how I want to communicate with you. Just so it's all laid out and so you can refer back to it later. Mm-hmm. I love it. It's so nice. Is there anything that you have found is a common thing that people leave out of contracts, something that gets overlooked, or is it just always different?
I mean, it's different, but frequently something people leave out is, what if it goes bad? Like, do you want to do mediation or arbitration before somebody files with a court? Do you live in the same state? Do you, like, if you are in Utah and your client is in California, which state can you file a lawsuit in? Like, do you want to be stuck traveling to California? Do you know what California law is that you would then be subject to? Like, so those, it's called choice of law, which is where we're saying like Utah law applies. And then your forum selection, which says, this is where we're going to resolve any disputes. Those are probably the biggest things I see that people leave off, because they just think, oh no, we're like, great, this is going to be fine. Mm-hmm. And it is until it isn't. So.
Right.
If you guys haven't checked out Skillshare yet, you need to. You can learn about pretty much any creative field from the best of the best. And one thing I love about Skillshare is that you don't have to pay per class. You just get a membership and you have access to all of their classes. And it's self-paced, so you can start as many classes as you want. You don't have to finish anything. You can jump around. If you want to brush up on any of your skills or learn something new, Skillshare is a really great place to do that. You can get 40% off an annual membership at the link in our show notes.
Okay, I wanted to talk a little bit about copywriting artwork. So artists who are making new pieces and putting them out into the world, do they need to be copywriting each piece?
So it depends. I know, you're shocked. If you can say that I'm creating a collection, then you can wait until the collection is complete and then you can file the collection as like one filing.
Okay.
But any piece of artwork, anything that you create, the moment you create it is protected by copyright. That copyright is a common law copyright, which means it doesn't really have any teeth to it. So you can tell somebody like, hey, that's my design, you need to leave it alone. And they should, but if they don't, if you haven't formally filed a copyright for it, then it does make it harder to enforce the request for them to either do a takedown or for them to stop selling it or to, you know, reach out to the website and say, hey, this website is completely using, you know, all of these copyrighted photos that don't belong to them to try and sell merchandise that they don't know, you know, whatever it is.
Right.
So you don't have to file a copyright to own the copyright to it. But if you want to try and enforce it, owning an official copyright that has been filed and was approved makes it so much easier. So
okay. No, I was going to say, on the flip side, is it possible that if someone uses your artwork and you don't have that official copyright filed and they copyright what they made with your artwork, and then they own the copyright to their work, does that mean that you no longer have the option to have that copyright?
So copyright is tricky because you want to file it before there are people who are infringing on it.
Sure.
So if you create something and then somebody else is creating something and somebody else is creating something, going back and being able to say like, hey, I did this and here's what I did is harder. So like if it's
harder to backtrack.
Yeah, it's harder to backtrack. It's harder to get the copyright approved. So if you think I've created something that somebody could potentially use in the future, or I'm putting it out there in a way that somebody could use, then you want to file that copyright. You want to get that protection. And if there's a way for you to do it, you know, where you have this whole collection and you're like, okay, this is, I did an artwork a day for the last 45 days. So I'm going to file this as, you know, the 2021 quarter one collection or whatever it is, like file it and get them approved. And then as you're selling, you know, this is the hard thing. If you sell something and somebody then uses it and you don't have the copyright and it's kind of out there, you can't really put it back. So if you're creating something that you could foresee somebody else using, you really want to get that copyright filed. And filing a copyright is faster and easier and cheaper than a trademark. So like a trademark takes forever. The fees are way more, like a fee for a trademark right now.
Yeah,
like
do you have
$350 a class? So where copyright, I think it's like
50. And how many, like, is there an average amount of classes?
So
I know it depends.
This is, it does, but also like a class is identified by the USPTO. There's a whole book that says, here's what the classes are. So you could have like class 25 clothing, but within clothing, you could say this trademark class 25 covers clothing and I'm doing hats and scarves and socks and shirts and sweatshirts. And you just list any type of clothing that you could potentially be, you know, that you're using. I say not potentially, you have to be using it. And you file it. So it's class 25, but it covers, you know, these 10 things where, you know, there's like websites and then there's two different types of websites. There's the front side of the website versus like all of the code on the back end of a website. So the class just depends on like what sort of identifiable good do you have? So are you using this trademark for legal services and social media or your website or like, how are you using it? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't count. Like if I'm saying, oh, the legal formative, I want to do that for clothing, but the only clothing I produce is clothing that has like my legal formative brand on it, then that would be considered promotional clothing. And that's not its own trademark class.
Swag.
Yeah. Swag does not equate, but if you're using
a clothing brand.
Yeah. But it's different because like Nike puts that swoosh mark on everything.
Yeah.
But in that sense, it's not just like, it means more than just like the brand, like it's now an embodiment of everything. And so that's how they kind of get away with it because they have Nike on the name tag. They have Nike, like it's a specific style of shirt that they've created. So there's like more to it than just like, I took this Gildan sweatshirt and I put this cute logo on it. Like, it's, mm-hmm. So that's kind of trademarks. And that process is where it gets pricey because if you have three classes, you're looking at what, $1,050 just in filing fees. That's not attorney fees. That is just filing fees that you're paying to the government. I haven't filed a copyright in the last like 4 months. So
does the price change?
It can, which is why I'm like, I maybe should have looked at that before, but I think it's like $50 a class. I can double check and then you can put it in the show notes. Kirsty said she checked, but it's significantly cheaper. So if you are creating artwork or graphic designs or things like that that you want to protect, then it's something that's much faster and easier to do. So.
Okay. So if you are, okay, let's see if I understand this right. So everything is like everything you create has a copyright, mm-hmm. but if you want to be able to fight someone who steals artwork from you, you need to actually file a copyright for either the collection or the piece that you want to be protecting.
Yes.
So it's like, what does the copyright that you automatically have, like what is that good for if you can't, you know what I mean?
It's not that you can't enforce it. You can, but it's much harder.
Okay.
So if you filed it, then there's a federal code that says, hey, you get attorney's fees, you get damages, you get, like, it has all of these automatic things that happen where if you were a small business and you're like, I've got this artwork and I just created it and I posted it online and somebody's already taken it, you're not likely going to be able to hire an attorney and say, hey, this person's stealing my artwork, I need to go after them, because you're going to have to foot that bill. You're going to have to pay that attorney for all of their time in order to fight that. Where if you have filed the copyright, you can say, here's all of the facts, let's go after them. And the attorney knows that at the end, they will be able to collect fees from the infringer.
Okay.
So it gives you the ability to send a letter and say, hey, according to this code, you're going to owe all of this if you don't stop. It will frequently make people just stop without fighting you, without making you go to court. But if you haven't filed and they know that, then they can say, you have to prove it. Like, take me to court. Show how I've used this. Show how I couldn't have come up with this on my own. Show how there's also something that is allowed in like copyright law where if somebody creates something and then you use it and you transform it somehow. And this is always changing. There are always cases that say this wasn't transformative or this was transformative. But if you take, Andy Warhol, he was like one of the first ones who did this, where he was taking other people's stuff and then he was doing something completely new with it, and it created a whole new art.
Mm-hmm.
That's allowed, even if you own the copyright. Even if you own the copyright, if they have done something transformative with it, which there's a test that says, here's what you have to do in order to have it qualify as transformative, then they can use your copyrighted artwork regardless. So if somebody is really kind of being tricky, they could say, you haven't officially copyrighted it, and what I've used is completely different anyway, so take me to court. Like, you're going to have to foot the bill. And then that makes it a lot harder for you as the owner to say, do I have the means to defend this? Do I have the means to pursue this? And where if you own the registered copyright, it's a lot easier to be like, hey, what you've done is not transformative. Here's the 4-part test. We own the copyright. You need to stop.
So. Okay. What is this test? I have never heard of this.
Well, it's 4 parts. And let's see.
Is it a myth that you have to make it 20% different?
I always hear people saying that.
Oh, really? I've heard it was 20. Yeah.
So I just sent somebody an email about this last week. There's not necessarily like a percentage that's like, oh, if you only use 5%, you're good. But if you use 7%, you're in trouble. Like, it kind of looks at the whole part more. Like, it's like, well, how much of it is the same? Did you use it in the same medium? Does it look the exact same? There was a street artist in California who just had a case come down where it said like his work was not transformative. And what he would do is he would take famous like photographs. I think there was one of Sting. It might have been Sting. And he like painted this huge mural, and then he added color and like did some other things to it. And the court came back and said, no, the expression is so distinct to the singular picture. And that's the same expression on his face. So it doesn't count.
Wow. I feel like that would be so hard to judge.
I have a question. So I'm the type of person where like, I am so afraid that I'm accidentally going to copy someone or do something the same as someone else or anything like that.
Me too.
It like stops me from wanting to like put work out there, because there's only so much work and research I can do to make sure I'm not copying someone. Does that make sense? Like,
and I will like, if something's going really well, I'm like, this is too easy. It must be in my subconscious. Like, I must have seen this before, because this is coming, it's coming too easy to me. I'm totally like that too, Steph.
So the thing about it is there are some things that like, even if you created this like very stylized like logo for somebody, and it was like an SJE or something, and the way you stylized it and everything, and then all of a sudden you send it out and you're looking, and then you come across something and it's not an SJE, it's three other letters, but the way they kind of put it together is similar. That doesn't mean what you've done is going to be violating their copyright. Like, there's only so much like creative space. And so to some extent, it's like, you know, did you make it enough different to where it's not a carbon copy? Okay. So it's not a carbon copy. Now let's look. Did you just use the same idea? Okay. That takes it an even better step. Like, if it was just the idea of, I swear there's like some trend where it's like all of the letters just like right on top of each other. And then that's like the cool logo or something. Like, that idea is not something that you can copyright and be like, I'm the only one allowed to do anything with letters stacked on top of each other. Like, that's just me. Like, that's not something that's really copyright. So as a designer, when you're looking at logos and you're going on Pinterest and you're looking for inspiration and you're pulling together this like mood board of like, okay, these are all of the pieces that they want, and then you kind of pull it into your own, you're gonna be okay. The problems come when it's like, okay, here is this, you know, like IKEA sign, and it's all in the very stylized, is that sans serif? Is that what that is? I'm
IKEA?
Yeah. Okay. I'm not I like to make things up when I talk to clients. I know what I'm doing, but I don't. Anyway.
You are right.
So it's like the sans serif font, and it's very distinct, like yellow and blue. Then if you take that and you create another very like sans serif, that same yellow and same blue, and it's also somebody who's selling furniture, and then now all of a sudden you're like, oh, did I go too far? Well, that's probably more of a trademark issue, because if there would be confusion, you know, with IKEA. But it's the same sort of thing with copyright. Like, there's always going to be phases of the moon artwork, right? Like, that's just something that humans are interested in. It can make very good artwork. So you can't really just be like, oh, you did phases of the moon, so I did phases of the moon first, so now you're, you know, violating my copyright. No, they would violate your copyright if they did it in the exact same, like medium. Like, if your medium was clay and they did clay as well, and they did the same colors of clay and the same textures of clay, and they did it in the same order, because that's the other thing, like phases of the moon can change order. But if they do it the exact same way, now you're looking more at like a copyright violation. But if you're like, oh, those phases of the moon and clay are really cool, but instead of doing it in like a growth, I'm going to mix it all up to where it's totally different, and I'm going to use a different style of clay, even though you took inspiration from that original piece, you're okay. Does that make you feel better? You're probably fine. Yeah.
This is why I love talking to you. You're like, you're probably going to be okay.
I'm like,
If it's something where you're really worried, I do have designers who are clients, and they will send me screenshots like, hey, this is what I'm thinking about. Here's where I am. Am I good or bad? And yeah. I'll look at it and be like, okay, like you're fine. Like, or okay, let's talk a little bit more. Where's the original? Let's compare yours to the original. And then, you know, we'll kind of go from there.
Yeah.
So to kind of segue into that conversation. So we talk a lot about how you can like offload things and you can hire people to do things that you're not qualified to do or you don't want to do anymore to like make your job easier, you know, love what you do sort of a thing. If someone were to hire as for like a business lawyer like you, what are some of the things that you can do for them? Like something that makes their business easier, something that, you know, takes that mental load off of them, like kind of like, I guess, pitch here. Like what can we expect if we hire someone and have you on our team?
So the biggest thing that I think I bring to a table is when somebody hires me and they say, hey, I need new terms and conditions and a privacy policy, or can you look at my website and make sure that everything is there? Then I can quickly go through and say, okay, you have terms and conditions, but they don't actually cover everything you need. Your privacy policy needs to be updated, so that way it's in conformity with the new California laws and the new EU laws. Do you have a, like you, I'm sure everybody is so tired of these, but on every website, you need to have a privacy policy, like banner that says, I accept this privacy policy. I agree to cookies, you know, whatever, however you turn that, like, I just can go back through and do a checklist of all of that. And then I say, let's look at your contracts. Let's make sure they're doing what you need to right now. And all of those things that just kind of like hang on in the back of your head where it's like, hey, am I doing this right? Is my LLC set up right? Am I doing everything I need to make sure that I keep my LLC and that it's looking right? Like, and they just kind of sit there in the back of their head and they keep you from really wanting to either grow, because you're like, oh, I don't know if I did this right. And if I get too big, that could be a problem. That's where I can come in and I can just say, okay, what are your concerns? How can we address them? Okay, here's a timeline of everything you need to do and I will take care of it. And when it's time to do this, like here's a benchmark for when we should file your trademark. We've checked, it's available, it should be good. Here's a timeline of when we should probably start applying for it. Here's a timeline of when you probably want to, you know, look back over all of your website stuff to make sure it's been updated recently. Oh, you have a client who's not paying, even though you have a signed contract. Great. Email me and I'll send them a demand letter that says you need to pay. The work's been done. You signed a contract. You need to pay. And if you don't, I'm an attorney and I'm involved. Like it just gives you that little bit extra like officialness, like I'm an official business owner. You really don't want to mess with me because I have people on my team who are taking care of me. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I do. I take care of my business owners. I take care of my clients and make it to where you do get to do the fun stuff for you. And I get to do the fun stuff for me because this is what I think is the fun stuff. So
cool. I love that. I feel like that's a really good note to go out on. This is so helpful.
Well, good. I want you guys to feel like there are people out there who are willing to help you with whatever small things you need. It doesn't have to be a big thing to hire someone. Like, it doesn't have to be the big, you know.
Okay, whatever. I have a question. You may or may not want to answer it, and that's totally fine. Just because I'm a believer in, like, I guess manifesting, right? Like if I know I'm going to go into a business and I'm going to say, okay, my goal is to hire a lawyer. My goal is to have someone like that to handle all of my lawyerly stuff. Ballpark, what would you say is a price range that someone would be able to expect to pay to get you on the team, like initially, just to like, I don't know, help you set up the business or something? Like,
So if somebody comes to me and they said, I have this idea and I want to set up this business, but I need an LLC and I need you to do that, then I charge a flat rate of $1,000 and I do all the registration stuff with the state. That includes your registration fees. You get your EIN. And then the important part that most people forget is It also includes an operating agreement. And then we hold an organizational meeting and we file minutes. We have an agenda. There's a member resolution. And then we execute the operating agreement. And then all of those documents, now I go froggy. All of those documents create your corporate binder. And then it just sets you up to, from then on, like, continue to do it every year. So then you continue to make sure that, like, your legal entity stays a separate entity and it doesn't get, it's called disregarded. It's where you've created an LLC, but you haven't treated it like a business. And so then if you were to get sued, they would come in and say, no, you filed an LLC, but you never did anything else. So we're going to pierce the corporate veil and hold you personally liable. And then that's how they get to you and your personal assets instead of just sticking with whatever company assets there are.
Mm.
And then once we've done that, we have a relationship. And as things come up, you know, like, oh, this client is being really difficult. I need to get an NDA, or, you know, I need to have a letter sent out just to clarify. I want to revise this contract. Any of those little things as they come up, you know, oh, I've already got Kirsty and I can send her an email and she'll tell me, like, hey, this is how much it'll be. And we can work that out. I also don't talk in small bits. I just talk a lot. So,
do you ever do like a retainer setup where you have like, you know, 1 month, 3 months, 6 month, a year retainer where they just pay you to have you on all the time?
I haven't, because for the most part, I just want you to keep your money. And like, if you have something, come and we'll take care of it. And if I don't hear from you for a year, like, awesome. That means everything's going well.
That's awesome.
You're so awesome.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. This was fun. Oh,
thanks so much for coming on. So where can we find you? Website, socials?
So my Instagram handle is The Legal Formative. And then my website is thelegalformative.com. And if you go to my website, there's a Calendly. You can schedule a consultation. You can just send me an email if you want to kind of get an idea of what it is you're looking for before you schedule something. But I do a half hour consultation for free just to kind of see if we vibe and if it's something that, you know, you really need now, or if it's something where we figure out down the road what you could need me. So
awesome. Thank you so much, Kirsty. You're amazing.
Well, I am just glad to come on and talk to you guys.
To stay up to date on all things Design Beat, you can follow us on Instagram at Design Beat Podcast, or check out our website, designbeatpodcast.com. Catch you later.